The start of a new year marks the return of discussions about New Year's resolutions. Even if you hate the term and avoid making specific resolutions, we are culturally geared to think about new ways of doing things in the new year. And lots of us think about losing a little weight. Refreshingly, the number one suggestion of today's guest is stop dieting. Winnie Abramson collects a whole lot of ideas into her book on lifestyle changes. It's called One Simple Change, Surprisingly Easy Ways to Transform Your Life. Winnie Abramson is an ND with a degree in naturopathic medicine. She's also a home cook, a recipe developer, and a food writer and photographer. And we're glad she's our guest today on the Jefferson Exchange. Hi, Winnie.
Hi there. Thanks so much for having me.
It's good to have you here. You're the author of the blog Healthy Green Kitchen. Tell us about that.
Yes, I am. It's a blog devoted to healthy recipes, healthy lifestyle, green living. I've been doing it for about 4.5 years.
And did you start with a bit of a disadvantage in healthy green eating because of your family's business?
I wouldn't say that. I'd actually say that my parents gave me a really strong foundation in what it is to eat really good home-cooked food. If people don't know, my parents had this restaurant. It's actually been closed for a long time, but it was a pretty famous restaurant when I was a kid in New York City. It was called the Quilted Giraffe.
And was it, I mean, this is fairly rich food, though, fairly sumptuous stuff.
Very rich food, yes. And actually, they had the restaurant for the whole time I was growing up. It was very rich food. So I guess what I mean is they gave me an appreciation for really good food. But what happened, and I talk about this in the introduction of the book, is that it was during the 80s, and so I had this conflicting messages coming to me. My parents had this very decadent French restaurant, but at the same time, as I got into my teen years, I started reading information and magazines and books about, things that told me to be healthy, that you actually shouldn't be eating the types of foods that my dad was cooking in the restaurant. So it was a bit of a mixed message I was getting, and I actually went down a sort of a bad spiral of dieting and extreme measures to what I thought to be healthy, but I kind of have come full circle, and I talk about that in the book. A lot of what I really recommend is moderation.
So you did that diet at age 16, I understand. I mean, and what ended up happening to you? What did you do to yourself?
Well, I was young, and I think I just had a lot of messages from the media telling me, you need to be skinny, you need to look a certain way, and I was impressionable. I think this is pretty common. I mean, I'm a lot older now. This was years ago. So I sort of just say no to those messages now. But as a teenager, I think it's pretty common that girls see images in magazines and you think you're supposed to look a certain way, and it's pretty common to start dieting when, in fact, I really didn't. There was nothing wrong with my body. There was nothing wrong with my weight. But I went on a really low-calorie diet for a really long time, and I exercised too much, and I didn't get the results I was looking for, let's just say. I did a lot of damage to my health. I didn't get skinny just because I was eating really wrong for my body and eating too little. Does that make sense?
It does. It absolutely does make sense. But you were, the medical doctors were convinced that there were X number of things wrong with you, but you finally went to a naturopath yourself, didn't you?
She was actually a medical doctor, but mm-hmm. She had more of a holistic perspective. So she, asked me a lot of questions about my diet and really looked at, she was the first person, all the other doctors I had been to, and I'm not bashing doctors at all, but the ones that I saw, really never asked me any questions about what I was eating. And, in retrospect now, had they asked those questions, they would have seen that most of the problems that I was encountering were because my diet was so restricted.
What did you do to your diet then? I'm trying to figure out what it was that you cut yourself off from.
I cut myself off from basically everything. again, in the 80s, everything in the media was very focused on low fat. Nowadays, not so much. Right now we're in a bit of a more of a low carb space, which I don't necessarily agree with either, but at that time, a lot of the recommendations were about lowering fat intake, And really, you know, as a 16-year-old girl, that wasn't really advice that I needed to listen to, but I didn't know that. And I think I came up with this concept in my head that if low-fat was better, then low-fat was good, then no-fat was better, which is actually very dangerous for, a growing girl. Anyone. A no-fat diet isn't good. I speak a lot in the book about the importance of healthy fats, but I didn't have that information at the time. Just had this message I was getting, which said, you need to eat less fat. So I basically ate none. And I ate very few. I sort of restricted my diet a lot by just, I ate things like bagels and frozen yogurt. And that was pretty much it. So it wasn't a balanced diet by any stretch of the imagination.
No, but you're feeling a lot better right now and sharing some of the secrets with us in the book.
Yeah.
We'll get much more to talk about here with the book One Simple Change, Surprisingly Easy Ways to Transform Your Life. Back with Winnie Abramson and your phone calls and emails in a minute five. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Winnie Abramson. She's an ND, a naturopathic doctor. She's also a home cook, recipe developer, and a food writer and photographer. She's put out a book called One Simple Change, and it's got more than one simple change. It's subtitled Surprisingly Easy Ways to Transform Your Life. It begins with her strong suit nutrition and moves on from there. You can join us on the Exchange as we talk about ways to improve our lives. 800-838-3760. Anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782 by email jx@jeffnet.org. So at the end of this period of dieting in your teens when you'd really kind of wrecked your health, I mean, how long did it take you to adjust your diet plans in a way that made you feel good, made your body feel good?
It took a little while. And that's one of the reasons why... the premise of the book is really that small changes over what can seem to many people like a lengthy period of time, has more benefits than just trying to, change your life in 2 weeks. it took a number. I had dieted like that for probably about 6 years. So it took, it took many months for some of my health problems to get better, and it took a number of years for some of the others to really improve.
Back to the root of the book, though, I mean, this is a good point, is it's not about making drastic changes in your lifestyle. It's about making one simple change and just sticking with it for a long period of time. Sort of like the asteroid diversion theory. If you catch the asteroid far out and just nudge it a few inches, it'll miss the Earth.
Right. It's about making one change at a time, focusing on one thing at a time, seeing how it goes, then making another. So you're really being mindful of one thing at a time. And not trying to change everything all at once.
We already mentioned that the first of the 50 is stop dieting. So just don't diet at all. I mean, so how would you define diet? Can you still restrict your calories or, bring your activity level up to match the calories? Or, I mean, what do you offer an alternative to dieting?
Well, it's going to depend on your goals. The book is not about weight loss. So, this isn't a book... that gives specific recommendations about weight loss. This is a book about, improving your health. So the focus is not on aesthetics. It's more on a healthy body and mind. That doesn't mean that one can't have a goal to lose weight. It's just not specifically addressed in this book.
And, in fact, you advocate not using a scale.
I do. Again, this book is a lot about my own experience. This doesn't mean that some people won't benefit from using a scale at times. I personally don't weigh myself. And I think a lot of people just put too much emphasis on their body weight, and it's just really not a measure. It's not a measure of health in a meaningful way to me. I mean, it is a measure of your body's relationship to gravity. if your goal is weight loss, obviously you might need that to check in. That's not something I talk about in the book.
That's wonderful. Your body's relationship to gravity.
I didn't make that up.
Let us take a call. We have Peter and Ashland on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Winnie Abramson. Her book is One Simple Change.
Hi, good morning. I am calling really with respect to a couple young young blossoming daughters that I have, and I went through a similar path growing up in a family that, even though we were, was very athletically oriented, and yet at probably about 60, my mom just up and died of colon cancer, and that was, you know, as I started to think more about it, yeah, that sent me to, I don't know if you know, Anne Marie Colbin in New York City there, and I went to her cooking school and really watched her go through this same thing where she was clearly obsessed with weight, you know, and having a hard time realizing that she's growing older and it's okay that she's not, you know, slender and svelte. But I think what I am concerned about in our country more than, you know, obviously in my kids, but I think at this point I've sufficiently brainwashed them into some reasonably good habits and avoiding, you know, avoiding exactly a lot of the stuff you're talking about. But when I look at my, my 13-year-old who's the oldest, and she's, you know, she's slender, she's cute, and she eats really well, and good variety and all that. And yet the next one, she's pushing 10, and if she could, I think she rivals a bird for the amount of food she eats.
All right, so it's a battle, it sounds like, to try to convince them to eat the good stuff and in the right amounts.
Yeah, or the younger one. Mm-hmm. The older one gets it and, you know, is mm-hmm. totally on it. And so anyway, I just, you know, I see the peer pressure that they both experience in the schools with people who, you know, as my brother said, you know, you're pretty much an alien in this world now where you cook, you know, at least a couple good real meals for your kids every day. Nobody does that anymore, you know.
True that. All right, thanks for
that. Anyway,
all right.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, which gets us on to the second suggestion in the book, which is eat real food. And when you say real food, what do you mean, Winnie?
You know, the terminology is difficult because, you know, there's this argument to be made for when you say real food. I mean, what does that mean? Because food that's not real, it's not, like, imaginary. But what I mean by real food, I guess most people would understand that to mean food that's, you know, it doesn't come out of a box, it's not processed. Food that's made from ingredients you could grow, hunt, just means whole foods, really. I guess that's the other way to say it.
But you have to admit, it's hard. I mean, particularly when that call was just a great example, because so few people do prepare full meals for their family, as we understand it these days. A lot of stuff comes out of the box, it goes into a microwave.
Yeah.
It's all quick and easy and convenient, but...
Yeah, you know, it is hard because people are busy. Being a blogger, a food blogger, you know, I live in this little... Maybe it's a little niche of people who all cook. You know, a lot of my friends cook. But that, I know, I'm very well aware that doesn't mean that the greater population all cooks every meal. I think that, you know, I personally don't want to make anyone ever feel bad for where they're at. If you don't cook a lot, I'd say just try and cook more. You got to start somewhere. If every meal you eat comes out of a box or gets heated in the microwave, you know, you have to, maybe it'd be good to start, just focus, you know, cook one meal a day. Maybe you have to start by cooking one meal a week. You just have, you know, I think everyone can benefit from cooking more at home. That's actually another chapter in the book.
Mm-hmm. So, what's a good place to start? Cook more. Yes. Chapter 10. So if people had to cook, I mean, is it generally dinner you want them to focus on, or should they be thinking about breakfast first?
I think it's going to be different for everyone. You know, breakfast is really important. That's another chapter in the book. I think it's going to be different from everyone, and you just have to look at where in your life you can, you know, what you can fit in, and everyone's different. Everyone's schedule is different. Some people, dinner is going to be the easiest thing, but maybe for some people, dinner is going to be the hardest meal to cook. Because of their schedule. So maybe for them, getting up half an hour earlier and cooking breakfast is going to be the better place to start.
Winnie Abramson is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about her book of ways that are 50 suggestions of ways that people can change their lives, and not in big ways. The book is called One Simple Change, Surprisingly Easy Ways to Transform Your Life. Winnie is a naturopathic doctor, a home cook, a recipe developer, a food writer, photographer, and blogs through Healthy Green Kitchen. You can join us at 800-838-3760, anywhere you can hear us, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Cooking aside, Chapter 3 is really interesting. Drink water first thing. What does that mean?
That just means, get up in the morning, and before you eat or drink anything else, have some water.
Just plain water?
I'm sorry?
Just plain water.
Plain water, you can add lemon, you can add lime, there, you know, it can be warm water. Yeah, just, it's actually one of the things, a lot of people read that chapter and for some reason they really key into it and start doing that and they feel a lot better. I think that's because a lot of people, they come from a place of getting up and having coffee first thing,
mm-hmm.
and maybe skipping breakfast. So this it's sort of a different way to start the day. It doesn't mean you can't have coffee. It doesn't mean you know, it just means start by having some water.
But you advocate room temperature water too, right?
I do. That's what I prefer. That doesn't mean, you know, if you love ice water, you can drink ice water. In naturopathic medicine, there's, you know, a little bit of a de-emphasis on, you know, freezing cold water. So
What's the perception of what the temperature will do for the body?
Your everything inside your body is room temperature. So just, you know, adding something that's freezing cold can be a little bit of a shock to the system. It doesn't mean that on a blisteringly hot day you wouldn't want to have cold water. But I find I feel best with the room temperature water.
And for the folks who would say, well, how about tea? That's got lots of water. Or how about coffee? That's got water in it.
It does have water in it. And again, it doesn't mean don't have those things. It just means try having the water first.
All right. So water before anything else.
Yeah.
Got it. All right. So let's see. Next one, get a good night's sleep.
Yeah, super important.
And I hear this from more people as time goes on, and there's also a bit of a process here in finding what's your own sweet spot, isn't there? I mean, because some people do great with 8 hours, and some people really need nine, don't they?
Yeah, I think but I would say for most people, a minimum of eight is really a good thing to shoot for. I think there's a lot of people who sleep far too little, and they don't necessarily connect it to not feeling well, but it's really huge.
It is a big one. Let us take a call. We have Jeannie in Medford on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Winnie Abramson, the author of One Simple Change.
Hello. I'm thinking about, before my comment, the cold water comment, the cold temperature of liquids. I heard that it drives the blood away from the stomach. Why you put cold ice on a toothache drives the blood away, and blood is needed in the stomach for digestion. And anything ice cold, a lot of people won't drink anything ice cold with a meal because it interferes with digestion. And my main comment was about real food, live food, and laws of physics. A great book, 70s or 80s, called The Raw Food Diet.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's been a lot of controversy about that, but I do understand from a scientist friend that they're living information cells in live food that we don't get if we sun-dry it, bake it, boil it, fry it, etc. Oh, and may I add microwave?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, well, and I do actually have a chapter in the book about eating more raw foods. So thank you for your comment.
And what is the benefit then of the raw? I mean, not just raw foods, but just eating more
right,
raw foods.
Right? Yeah, I'm not an advocate of eating just raw foods, but as Jeannie pointed out, raw foods they do have more enzymes. They're live. You know, the cooking process. You know, it changes things. It doesn't necessarily make things less healthy. It just changes things. But it's good to have a certain percentage of raw foods in your diet for sure.
Manage your stress is one of these. Now, there are lots of folks, I'm sure, who'd respond by saying, well, you know, I can manage my stress only so far. The fact is I'm not the one who assigns all this work to me. That's my boss, you know. So,
yeah.
So within that framework, then, what are your recommendations for managing stress?
There are a lot of recommendations in the book. I think it's just, it's going to be different for everyone. A lot of what I talk about in the book, you know, it connects back to the sleep piece. Exercise, regular exercise, helps many people manage stress. Paying attention to your diet, watching caffeine, things like that can help. But really, you know, each person is going to have to look at their individual situation and come up with a plan.
And one of the things you point out is that that caffeine is something you need to be careful about if you're trying to manage your stress.
Yeah. Over-consuming caffeine can definitely affect you in a negative way. You won't be able to effectively manage stress if you drink too much caffeine.
So does caffeine actually, and I think you say this in the book, that it does actually help stimulate the glands that secrete cortisol, the stress hormone, and adrenaline?
It does, your adrenal glands.
Huh. Wow.
So if you are overstimulating your adrenals by drinking too much caffeine, that can make you less able to deal with stressors in your life.
All right. And then we move on to move your body. So you say move your body almost every day. But what are some of the basic lower level limits? You wouldn't want to drop below what amount of movement in a day?
You know, that's what I mean by move your body every day is basically most people don't move enough. Not everyone. Some people don't move enough, don't get enough exercise. But then there are people who exercise too much, and I do caution about that in the book. I think that's going to be different for everybody. I mean, I lift weights. That's my main type of exercise. I lift weights. I do that 4 times a week. And so, you know, I spend less, maybe an hour at the gym. Not an hour working out for a whole hour, though. I take a lot of breaks. And then maybe I walk on the other days, or maybe some days I just rest. But it's more about the consistency of doing that. You know, I do that week in, week out. I think for a lot of people, they just don't have a regular habit of exercise. So when I say move your body, I mean, you know, get into the habit of moving in, you know, some way, some cardio, some strength training, some flexibility. I mean, there are a million types of exercise that people can do. I don't have one specific recommendation. You got to find what you like and what you're going to do and do it consistently.
But just as a beginning point for people who might have been rather sedentary, I mean, is there 30 minutes of walking a day? Is that a good place to start?
If you can only fit in 10 to start, that's a place to start. I think just doing something. If you're 100% sedentary, if you started by just walking 10 minutes a day, you'd be better off than doing nothing. And once you're doing 10 for a while, you can do 20. Maybe after you're walking for 20, you know, start to feel better. Maybe you want to start doing more cardio. Maybe start doing something else. I think you got to start somewhere.
All right. The suggestions are not just in the book about things to eat and how to exercise and all that stuff. This is not, again, just a body book, but it's about getting organized in lots of other ways as well. And there are chapters in here. For example, Let It Go is about reducing the clutter, not just physically, but also mentally. When you say let it go, are you talking about just not taking too much onto yourself? Or for that matter, into your closets?
I'm talking about not holding on to things. Maybe, you know, for a lot of people that manifests as physical clutter, keeping things they don't need. For some people, like you say, you know, it manifests as mental clutter, you know, holding on to anger, resentment, things like that, that helps you, you know, it keeps you from moving forward in your life.
I noticed that that you talk about your email box even for a good place to reduce some clutter.
Yeah, that's a struggle for me. I get a lot of emails, and trying to keep on top of that is hard, but it's important. I know I get stressed when there's, you know, when I go in my email and just seems like, you know, so much is piled up. So I know I've spoken to other people about this before, you know, finding a system to help you reduce that clutter in your email and everywhere else can really help reduce stress.
And in the physical world, have you reduced clutter as well? Have you reduced your possessions just a bit, pared things down to make it a little more manageable?
Yeah, I try and take a minimalistic approach to my possessions, yes.
Not to the point where people walk in your house and say, where's your furniture?
No, not at all. But just in terms of, like, piles of things around and, you know, clothes and that sort of thing. I try not to keep stuff around that I don't use.
Winnie Abramson is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is One Simple Change. It actually includes 50 simple changes you can do. A good time to think about this in terms of the coming year, the year we're now in, 2014. Much more to talk about with Winnie Abramson. We'll take your phone calls and emails as well when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute five. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Winnie Abramson. She holds an ND, a degree in naturopathic medicine. She's also home cook, recipe developer, food writer and photographer, the author of the blog Healthy Green Kitchen, and the author of a book called One Simple Change, Surprisingly Easy Ways to Transform Your Life. And yes, it is more than one simple change. You can pick any of the 50 on the list and perhaps begin turning your life into something you're a little more proud of. Join us on the Exchange if you'd like to take part. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. And by email, jx@jeffnet.org. There is a chapter that immediately follows the chapter we were just talking about organizing and letting go of things, and this is called Revamp Your Pantry. So it kind of ties together your emphasis on food and the discussion about getting yourself organized. How should we be thinking about revamping our pantries?
That's going to depend on how much space you have and on your interest in cooking and where you want to go with it. But I do give suggestions in the book for, ways you can organize your staples, what types of staples to keep in the house. I think part of the reason why some people don't cook a lot is because they don't keep the right sort of staple ingredients in their homes. And if they did, if they had more, healthful ingredients that would help them cook more diverse, interesting meals, then they'd be more likely to do that.
So just at a minimum, what are some of the staples you would absolutely recommend as a bare-bones pantry?
Well, I cook a lot of different ethnic foods, so I keep tons of herbs and spices. I have a lot of different legumes, dried beans, canned beans also because it's convenient. I keep a lot of different types of flours and different things for baking because I like to bake a lot. When I eat sweets, I like to make my own stuff for our family. Then you could sort of get into the freezer also, keeping healthy meats, fish, different types of things in the freezer so that you have them when you're in a pinch to make a meal is useful.
Mm-hmm. A lot of beans, a lot of flours you mentioned, and then do you keep a lot of rice around the house too?
Yeah, different kinds of rice. I'm a cook, so I have a lot of different types of ingredients, maybe more so than the average person. But, I think it keeps well. So I just like to have a lot of things for variety. And then, if I see a recipe in a magazine or on a blog, I want to make, I likely have what I need to do that. So it doesn't, I don't have to run to the store and buy a million different things. So I like to just keep a lot of staples on hand.
Let's take a call. We have Dennis and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Winnie Abramson. Her book is One Simple Change.
Hi.
Hi.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Here's my question.
Yep.
There's been a lot of books written about what your book's about.
Yep.
And so my question is, what is the one simple thing in your book that is different than all the other ones that have been written about the same thing?
That is a good question. I wouldn't say that there necessarily is something that's different. I think it might be my perspective. What people have told me what they really like about the book is that there's a lot of me in it. And it's like sitting down with someone who maybe has a lot of knowledge. You're sitting with them at Starbucks, and they're just talking to you. It's very personal. It's about my... as Jeffrey mentioned, I have a degree in naturopathic medicine, but I also have a lot of personal experience making changes in my life, and I also do a tremendous amount of research, so the book is heavily referenced. So I think that's what I'd say is different.
Dennis, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Identify your food sensitivities shows up in Chapter 11. How do you go about figuring out the stuff that you're sensitive to and how you're sensitive to it?
that can be a little tough, actually. I give some suggestions. I also do recommend, that might be something you want to work with a doctor to determine. Nowadays, I think there's a lot of push to, restrict certain foods out of your diet, but maybe unnecessarily. So this is sort of more of a, it's more direction to not restrict things unnecessarily. If you have real food sensitivities, you shouldn't eat them, but you shouldn't necessarily restrict things out of your diet that are arbitrary. Does that make sense?
It does, but then it raises the question about the suggestion about going gluten-free. Be wary of wheat is a chapter in here as well, and you want to tell people to consider going gluten or grain-free. If you don't want to restrict things from your diet unnecessarily, I mean, how do you know? I mean, is it really just a trial and error kind of thing? You go some.
It can be. I do think for many, you know, you can give it a try. Try it for a week. If you don't feel any better, don't keep doing it. That's really my recommendation. I think there is this big emphasis on gluten-free and wheat-free these days. I think it can benefit people. I think for some people, though, it's really not necessary. And for some people, it may just be a matter of decreasing the consumption, maybe not having, you know, something with wheat in it at every meal. But if you just ate less, you might feel better. You don't necessarily have to eat none.
Now, you have tried some diets yourself, not diets, but ways of eating. You mentioned the I'm talking past the teenage diet years, but for example, on your blog, I noticed that you you did try the paleo diet and then ditched it. For the folks who don't know it that well, can you explain what it is and then why it didn't work for you?
The paleo diet is a diet that's pretty popular now. It is a diet that emphasizes foods that, you know, the cavemen would theoretically have eaten, so maybe just a lot of emphasis on meats, vegetables, no grains, no dairy products, no legumes, so it's fairly restrictive. A lot of people are following that diet now and touting its benefits, but it didn't work for me, as you said.
What were the problems that you noticed with it? What were the things that made you decide it was, this isn't working for me?
It is too restrictive for me. I really take more of an approach of eating personally. I really feel best when I eat a wide variety of foods, a little bit of everything. I don't restrict foods in my diet these days. I mean, different points in my life I have. But now I really feel best when I just eat, you know, a diet that has a lot of different foods. Maybe, you know, I talk in the book a little bit about, you know, aiming to eat 85% whole foods and then 15% approximately. I mean, I don't really add it up. That 15% can really be anything. That's treats or stuff, you know, going out for pizza or going out and just not worrying about it too much. The food I eat, I try and cook myself and have it be pretty wholesome.
How do you get out of a rut, though? Because it's way too easy to just keep pushing the shopping cart through the store on Saturday. I know because I do this myself. And, I usually buy this. So I'm going to buy this again, et cetera. And, I mean, obviously, we're talking one simple change. So there's one new thing to buy this week, maybe. And I don't know. What's a good place to start?
I, like, personally, you know, I maybe go through a food magazine or a food blog and see something different that I don't usually make, so, you know, and just I challenge myself a little bit in the kitchen, like to make new things, try different things. I mentioned I really like to make a lot of different ethnic foods. So, you know, pick a region of the world, something that you've tried before, never tried to cook it at home. That's how I challenge myself.
With those ethnic foods, I mean, have you generally eaten an example of this at a restaurant or prepared by somebody else?
Yeah, you know, maybe like I gravitate towards Asian food. I love Thai food. So I like to make that sort of thing at home. You know, if I've tried something in a restaurant, then I might try and emulate it at home. But sometimes I'll just look in a magazine and see something. I may have never had it in my life, but it appeals to me.
The reason I ask is because if you haven't had it before, how do you know you're doing it right if you're doing it from a recipe?
I don't worry so much about doing it right. You know, I just try and have fun in the kitchen, have fun with food, get my kids to try different things. I like to try new things. If you don't like it, you don't have to make it again.
You advocate finding your carb balance in the book, and you talked very early on about the mistake of your teen years, which is to eliminate all fats from your diet. A lot of people do eliminate a lot of carbs in their diets right now. If they do want to keep some in there but not that many, what's a good baseline of carbohydrates in any diet?
That really depends on the person, really depends on the activity level of the person. I'm at a point in my life where I don't really worry about restricting carbs. I mentioned earlier I lift weights, so I'm pretty active in that way, and I find carbohydrates help me in the gym. They make me feel better. So I don't, you know, I think that's it's really an individual thing. I definitely don't recommend that people eat a very low carbohydrate diet. I think meals should be balanced. You should eat some carbohydrates, some fats, some protein at every meal. So I think I don't really advocate that people, you know, count their carbs too much. I think it's better to focus on doing things like getting more active, eating more protein, things like that, and then the carbohydrates usually fall, you know, into a healthy range when you pay attention to those things.
We have an email here from Annette in Eugene. She writes, I'm reading so many conflicting stories about cholesterol. Some with high LDL live long lives. Others with low LDL die young. Is this another case of hype to push statin drugs? And will giving blood lower your LDL? That's from Annette in Eugene.
Annette, I'm going to have to say that this is not, it's not something I'm an expert on, so I'm not going to necessarily be able to answer that question. I will say, though, that you know, and I talk about this in the book, that if I do think that people are often too concerned with cholesterol in food. You know, I do advocate eating, you know, eggs and things like that. I think it's fine in the diet, but I can't speak specifically to statin drugs or anything like that. I'm just not an expert on that.
All right. What about the part about giving blood, lowering your LDL? I had heard something about
that
recently.
I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay, not a plea. So a couple of chapters here in the middle of the book, swap out your salt is one, followed by be choosy about chocolate. Now you're really starting to scare people. So talk about the swap out your salt. What should we be swapping it for?
I just prefer people to use the more natural salts, like sea salt, instead of using table salt. And as far as chocolate goes, that's just, you know, more about choosing fair trade chocolate and chocolate, you know, darker chocolate. Those are, you know, sort of healthier than just choosing your run-of-the-mill milk chocolate.
Mm-hmm. And back to the salt, what about iodized salt versus non-iodized and sea salt versus non-sea salt?
Yeah, you know, I advocate using sea salt, and I talk about why in the book. But I also, if you're using sea salt and it doesn't include iodine, you do need to pay attention to, you know, finding other sources of iodine in your diet, seafoods and that sort of thing.
All right, and I see the places where you're urging people to take it easy. Scratch the soda, cut the caffeine. I'm looking in here for a list about references to alcohol. Any particular position you're taking on and what people should be drinking or not when it comes to alcoholic beverages?
I don't think I really talk about alcohol in the book. I think that would fall under moderation. You know, something that can be abused when you use it too much, something that's probably fine for most people in moderation.
All right. As far as the soda part goes, I mean, no-brainer when it comes to the sugary sodas, but we've had several people on who also advocate not doing too much of the diet sodas. And you might hear a sound of defensiveness in the voice of the guy who does a 32-ounce big gulp every day. Diet cola, though. But so what is the harm, then, in the diet stuff? Do we know?
You know, there are some people who say that the sweeteners are harmful, the diet sweeteners. There's also an argument to be made for not drinking diet sodas because you're sort of tricking your body. You're possibly messing with the insulin. You're tricking your body that you're getting something sweet, but there's no sugar there. You know, again, 32 ounces of diet soda a day, that might be moderation for some people. I don't know what the rest of your diet looks like. I personally would rather see people stay away from soda in general, but you know, I'd say I have a couple sodas a year, I am not a big soda drinker, but you know, I might choose to have like a natural ginger ale, natural root beer every now and then.
All right. So if you're going to do soda, make sure it's something a little more natural, which again is a key to a lot of this, to make sure you're doing healthy foods here.
There is a big emphasis on food quality in the book. Yes.
But again, the book does go far beyond just talking about food. One Simple Change has a whole lot of suggestions for other ways to do things in your life, you know, ways to exercise, connect with nature, be in the moment. But leave a smaller footprint is one of the chapters here, too.
Yeah, there are a significant amount of chapters at the end of the book about more focused on green living.
And what's a good way to start with leaving a smaller footprint if that's something that really concerns you, something you're really interested in approaching?
There are a number of ways you can do that. I think the first thing is just developing an awareness of things like your energy, you know, your energy usage, your different habits, you know, your driving habits, you know, there are even smaller things, plastic grocery bags, reducing, reusing, recycling, things like that, which are pretty common sense, I think, at this point. But some people, you know, just don't have an awareness of those. Or they haven't really made it important in their life. So it's just, it's another, just another thing to think about.
Winnie, was it hard to get up to 50? Was it hard to get down to 50? I'm just curious about the process of either compiling or whittling the list.
You know, when I started writing the book, I had other things in mind that shifted. So some things that I thought maybe would be a whole chapter ended up just being a sub little section of a chapter. I could have written more. I could have written less. I decided that 50 was good because it gives people a goal where if you did one a week, you could do it over the course of a year.
It's a compact book with a nice round number, 50 suggestions. It's called One Simple Change, Surprisingly Easy Ways to Transform Your Life. Winnie Abramson wrote it, and she joined us on The Exchange today. Winnie, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. That'll do it for today's Exchange. You can find out more about the program and subjects and suggest a guest at jeffexchange.org. You'll find show topics and recordings as well on our Facebook page with the same links available on Twitter. Tomorrow on The Exchange, it'll be the first Friday of the year. Our First Friday Arts segment will expand to talk about arts organizations more generally and what you do, even if you don't have events in January. At 8:30, we'll talk about the Josephine County Fairgrounds and how they got a new lease on life. And then we'll talk about the ending of long-term unemployment benefits and what that means to a large portion of the population on our 9 o'clock segment tomorrow. That's all tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange. Our producer is Charlotte Duren, also manning the controls today. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.